Edutainment Learning is powered by Academica Virtual Education and Collegia TV. For more information, visit www.edutainmentlearning.com.
First of all, it's an absolute privilege to be able to do this today, to connect across the water, so to speak, and here in the United States. So my name is Christopher Costa. I go by Chris. I'm the executive director of the International Spy Museum. I spent 25 years in the U.S. Army. I retired as a full colonel, and I ended up my last job in the U.S. government was as the special assistant to the president for counterterrorism at the National Security Council at the White House in 2018. So I spent a career doing counterintelligence, catching spies, and I spent a good portion of my career leading spy networks, recruiting spies to collect intelligence, mostly on the battlefields, but not just on battlefields, from Bosnia to Afghanistan to Iraq across the Middle East. So in sum, that's where I spent my career, focused on military intelligence, principally in the counterterrorism realm, but also spy catching early on in my career.
Great. Do you mind if we just jump right into some student questions that have already been emailed to me? Because I don't want to keep you very long.
Not at all.
All right.
Pleasure is mine.
So we got some questions. We have kids from Spain, Italy, France, Florida, Nevada, and thank you guys all for joining us. So one of our students wanted to know, and this came from Spain, he wanted to know what is needed for a career in the intelligence field. More specifically, what degree or major would you recommend that they follow in college?
So that's a wonderful question. In short, I think the objective is to get the best possible grades in whatever you pursue. But clearly having proficiency in languages, understanding other cultures, traveling abroad, that's less of a problem for Europeans. For example, they spend a lot of time traveling to other countries. It's because of the proximity. For our United States listeners and folks watching here in the States, try to travel abroad, get to know other cultures, speak and seek out knowledge in foreign languages. But at the end of the day, if you want to be an intelligence officer, you have to hone your emotional intelligence skills, which means understand people, learn to listen before speaking, have empathy. Emotional intelligence, in short, is really critical. But at the end of the day, be the best possible student that you can be. It's critical to communicate, both in writing, but also orally, to express yourself. So those are some universal areas to concentrate in: foreign languages, other cultures, but sciences too. You can specialize in science and still be a human intelligence officer.
So, and that's a wonderful answer. And, you know, it's such an eclectic career to pursue. One of our students in France, they wanted to know that they did some research on clandestine services. Can you explain what does that mean when someone goes down that career path?
So that's a great question. So for example, in France, you have a clandestine service. It's known, I think the acronym is still DGSE. I've been to the headquarters. I've met the head of DGSE. I've worked with intelligence officers in France. And the idea is most countries in the world have a clandestine service, which theoretically is secret. It's a closed community, but your objective is to understand the world. But that means, let's cut to the chase, that means you're going to recruit people to spy for your nation. France is very proficient at human intelligence. That means the clandestine service has stations across the globe that are spotting individuals that have placement to information and have access to information that serves the French state. So clandestine services would include the DGSE in France, but frankly, it would also include the CIA here in the United States. And there are various departments of the United States, for example, that have a clandestine arm. Certainly the Department of Defense, collects intelligence across the globe as well to service military requirements. So clandestine service is principally secretive, and it's not widely known, except for when you tune into International Spy Museum programs. We don't share classified information, but we bring a lot of guests on board that tell the stories that can be told about clandestine work.
And and it's exciting history, and it's a huge part of U.S. History. I know we have a lot of kids around the world, and especially here in the United States, who study about our domestic history here, and it's kind of intertwined with world history. So can you, by any chance, touch on the history of the CIA for those who aren't aware of the Office of Strategic Services and kind of how and why it came about?
Yeah, let me do this very quickly, but try to be as succinct as I can. The United States was very cool toward, and I don't mean like yay cool, I mean cool in terms of cold, on the idea of having a standing intelligence service. From the American Revolution to the US Civil War to the Spanish-American War to World War I, the United States only had wartime intelligence services for short term to answer battlefield requirements. What's on the other side of the hill? The United States was always suspect of having a standing intelligence service because there was always fear that we would have, and no offense to our listeners, that we would have somebody that would act imperial. In other words, we are a democratic republic here in the United States. We don't have a king. We have a tradition of a very democratic, people-oriented state, if you will. So the United States was very concerned that an intelligence service would pose a threat to our Constitution. As such, we certainly needed intelligence services during the Second World War. So an ad hoc organization pulled together. It was known as the Office of Strategic Services. We learned from our European partners how to conduct intelligence operations during the Second World War. In the immediate aftermath of the World War, the United States, along with our allied partners, were victorious. And there was a big debate that played out circa around 1945. And that debate played out till 1947, whether the United States was going to have a peacetime intelligence service. And in the end, it was almost accidental, but the CIA was born out of an act, a National Security Act of 1947, which is essentially legislation, a law that said we can have central intelligence. The Central Intelligence Agency was born in 1947. We just had its 75th anniversary. For the last 75 years, the United States has had a peacetime intelligence service known worldwide, and the name is the Central Intelligence Agency. So that's a quick summary of how the CIA was born, but its roots go back to the Second World War, arguably. Or you can take it back to the American Revolution. But as a formal service, it didn't stand up until 1947. Thank you for testing me, whoever asked that question.
No, it was one of the kids from Italy. And thank you, guys. We're going to try and get through all these questions with the time that we have. And, you know, the side note, one of the first spies, Nathan Hale, he was a teacher. Right. So that's, there you go. And you guys can learn all about him if you Google him. So one of our kids wanted to know, if you had to pick one exhibit at the museum that is your favorite exhibit, what would that be at the Spy Museum in Washington, D.C.?
Boy, it's so hard because I have such a passion for all of our stories. But I am partial, and I can tell this audience, to the ice axe that was used for an assassination in 1940 of a dissident by the name of Trotsky. The actual assassination tool is here in the Spy Museum, but it's even relevant today because we know that the Russian intelligence service, for example, conducts assassination across the world. So I think it's really relevant to consider that assassination, which seems so archaic, so savage, so horrible, so horrific, is still employed by some nations in the world. But I love the story. It was front page news across the world when an intelligence officer dispatched by Stalin, who was the despotic, bad, evil leader of the Soviet Union, I guess, depending on your perspectives, right? But certainly from a United States optic, Stalin was a bad actor, not during the Second World War, but later. And he dispatched somebody to kill Trotsky, who was speaking out against his regime. And in 1940, he was executed in Mexico City. So I love that story. I love that we have the actual ice axe.
That is intense. And if anyone is ever in Washington, D.C., I highly recommend going to their museum. So I'll jump right along to these questions because I know we got about 10 minutes left. And guys, keep them coming in the chat or you can email them here. So one of the kids wanted to know, if I'm bilingual, does that help me if I want to go into intelligence? And can you elaborate why languages are important?
So languages are absolutely crucial. And being bilingual is absolutely crucial, and it's a competitive advantage because that it's absolutely important to be able to operate in another culture as a native in many cases. And I think the language gives you a leg up. Also, when you study and appreciate language arts, you're also going to learn a lot about the culture. Frankly, I'm a bad example. I went to and deployed to so many different countries to operate that I had to rely on translators. That meant somebody in the room with me, an additional person. I had to make sure I was the focus with the individual I was developing, perhaps to recruit as a spy, but I had this individual that was a translator. I would have preferred not having a translator because that can be a distraction. But I think in sum, having an appreciation for other languages gives you a leg up. It is, in fact, a competitive advantage. So good for whoever asked that question, if you have additional language skills.
That's great. And thank you for elaborating on that. And I know we have a lot of kids on here who are bilingual. So again, thank you for joining us. So one of our students, they wanted to know, what would be some of the expectations of them if they go down a career path of a career in the intelligence community? Specifically, are they allowed to have family if they go into the clandestine services spy route?
Absolutely. So to be clear, you can do virtually anything in the intelligence community. You can be a psychologist, you can be a doctor, a medical doctor. You get vetted, meaning you pass your background investigation and you parachute, not literally, figuratively, you become part of the intelligence community. But more narrowly, if your question is about the clandestine service or doing the kind of work that I did, which was clandestine in nature, having a family is absolutely doable. I'm with the same woman I married almost 40 years ago. My wife would kill me for not remembering how long we've been married, but it's a long time and it's been a happy almost 40 years. And I will tell you, my family survived it. It was challenging. It was at times very difficult for my wife, but at the end of the day, being a military officer, I could go off and deploy and operate clandestinely overseas with little interaction with my family till I redeployed. But in training exercises where we have unique requirements, where my wife might not have the details on what I'm doing, how I'm doing it, my status, am I who I say I am? Am I Chris Costa, the neighbor who lives in the middle of suburban Virginia, maybe when I'm traveling to conduct exercises or to operate overseas, I'm not that same person. So these put pressures on families. But I would tell you that when you join the intelligence community, you're living among people that operate in that world. And it becomes just like the air you breathe. And there's a whole structure to support it. But certainly, you are encouraged to have a family, to live a life to the extent that you can, but it does put pressures on you. And I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It does stress people out to operate clandestinely. In some cases, without getting into a lot of the details, you have a day job and a night job. You have two jobs. By day, you do some basic work. And at night, you might do clandestine work. So essentially, you're doing two jobs, and your neighbors really have a normal 8-to-5 job. That puts a lot of pressure on the families. My wife didn't fully appreciate the work that I did until I came to the Spy Museum, and I began to thoughtfully tell people about that life that I lived. So it does challenge one to have a family, but it's absolutely doable and encouraged, I think.
Well, we thank you for joining us, and please congratulate your wife and congratulations to you as well, and a happy, long, happy marriage. So we'll go with three more questions, then we'll let you go. This is from Gerard. Gerard, I'm going to allow you to unmute. Go ahead. You had a very good question you had sent in earlier.
Hello. Thank you. My question is about if a career in intelligence is rewarding in a professional and economic way.
So absolutely, unequivocally, to be clear, it was a very rewarding career. I'm very proud of the work that I did with my team of people, with all humility. I mean, there was no choice in my life insofar as what I wanted to pursue. And it was exceedingly rewarding on a personal and a professional level to serve my nation and to do work that only a very, very small percentage of likely people in your country and my country do the work of clandestine service. So it was very rewarding. Now, financially, not so much, right? Because you serve the government. Now, you'll always have plenty to eat. You'll always have a nice car if that's what you want. You can take your vacation every year, but you're not going to have your resort home on the coast of Maine if you're in the United States, or you're not going to have a resort home in Spain or Portugal. That's not going to happen until you leave the service. But when you have a resume that you can share, I think people consider you a very trustworthy individual based on the service that you did. So it's good advice for intelligence officers to clean up the resume, get it cleared by your respective agency so you can tell the story of the work that you did to a point. And then you can enjoy some financial rewards. I hope I understood the question.
No, you're good. You answered it perfectly, sir. So we'll go with the two more questions and we'll let you go. This is Francesco. I'm sorry. Go ahead and unmute. You had a very good question. One of our friends in Italy.
Hi, Christopher. I'm sorry you can see me because there's a problem with the video camera. So about spy movies, the series James Bond, clearly the story that they are narrated are really romanticized with the particular characteristics that aren't actually very true.
I think we're having a network issues on that one. He had sent this in, so I'll go ahead and ask this, Francesco. So he wanted to know, what is the most common and wrong cliche in spy movies?
I think the personal conduct of an intelligence officer. James Bond runs around the world with multiple women and lives a life of, you know, a rock star, so to speak. And that really, you know, obviously entertained people for decades in a different time clearly in a different context, but that was entertaining. And that is very much mythology. At the end of the day, to be an excellent intelligence officer, your conduct has to be above reproach. In other words, you have to exercise a high degree of personal conduct and moral awareness, despite the fact that you're in a business where you have to use deception. You have to, at times, tell lies to protect your cover. But at the end of the day, those views of that really are romanticized of being an intelligence officer, that's mythology. And my gosh, have you ever seen James Bond type a report? For every operational act, you have 5 hours of typing. Nobody shows that, right? You go out and conduct an operational act. James Bond, I've never seen him behind a word processor. You know what I did when I was done in Belgium after going to certain meetings with my foreign partners? I then had to secure my notes in a safe. I spent the next day writing reports and briefing people, and it was exhausting. I never saw James Bond do any of that. So that's the greatest mythology, the idea of the idea that you have to follow up with meticulous detail and hard, rigorous work, like writing, like honing your observation skills to report on things that you heard and things that you saw. So you never see that in a James Bond movie. That said, to the question, I would say that there isn't a value to James Bond movies, a significant value. And we demonstrate that here at the Spy Museum. It offers people like me an opportunity to educate people on being a real intelligence officer by comparing scenes in 007 movies. So it has a certain value. And there are pieces of those movies I could pull out and say, I've done that.
That is interesting. They don't show the clerical side of it. All right. Before we let you go, because I know it's getting a little late for our kids in Eastern Europe, but Colonel Costa, can you give any advice to these kids as they go off into the world and figure out what they want to do?
Geez, that's a wonderful question. So my advice is to be true to yourself, to have a high degree of integrity, set the example in everything that you do, study, read, and don't let any doors close on you. Don't let others decide what you're going to do. When one door closes, you find an open door. And if you have to stick your foot in the door so it doesn't shut on your face, do it. And I say that, you know, that's an example, right? That's a symbol, the idea of pushing through a door, the idea of seeking what it is you want. Because if I listened to people every time they said, I didn't have what it took, or I didn't have this language, or I didn't have what they needed, I never would be in the position to talk to you today about my career. So I never let no be the final answer. And I tried really hard to have a high degree of integrity and do the right things and just continue to pursue what it was that I wanted to do. And I read and I studied and I tried to ask a lot of questions about the world. So in short, those are the real secrets of certainly my success. If you think I had any success at all, it was about integrity and perseverance, stick-to-itiveness. I don't even know if that's a word, but I think you understand my point, right?
We
persevering absolutely. And trying to not be taken off the path that you want as individuals.
Well, thank you, Colonel Costa, for your service to democracy, to our country, to the free world. Thank you for spending time with us today. Before I end the meeting for all, I want to allow everyone, you guys can unmute, and can we all say thank you to Colonel Costa for taking time out of his valuable day to talk to you guys. Thank you so much, Colonel.
Thank you. Thank you.